And welcome into Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson taking you through this Tuesday morning. Fellas, what's going on? How we doing?
We're all right. We had two football games yesterday. Can't say either one of them was very good, but still, two football games.
I'm digging the doubleheader on Mondays.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not supposed to be that way, but maybe it will be in the future. I mean,
we're on a one-week streak of Tuesday Night Football that's going to end tonight.
Yeah.
I was good with that, too. Very disappointed in the Bills-Chiefs game. I thought it was going to be a great game, and I really didn't watch much of the debacle after that.
Probably good.
There's a lot of NFC East coming up on primetime. It's bad.
Yeah, Thursday Night Football, yeah. Baby. Giants-Eagles. I can't wait.
Unbelievable. Just go on and preemptively strike. I'm not going to watch that game. Not going to do it.
And then, look, so the Eagles, Zach Ertz out for the game. Miles Sanders possibly out for the game. So you just got backup running backs, backup tight ends, and some great Thursday Night Football.
So you're telling me the Giants may be on a winning streak now.
Oh, don't underestimate.
Think about that.
Don't underestimate the Giants' ability to screw things up.
Oh, no. I mean, I think they should all just tie the rest of the year. Peter King had a great tweet. It was like, okay, here's your 4-5 game in the NFC. You know, January 9th, 4 seed, 10-6 Bears or 11-5 Bears at the 5-10-1 Eagles. The 4 seed.
5-10-1.
The 4 seed 5-10-1 Eagles hosting a playoff game. Imagine that. But the Cowboys, like, boy, are they bad.
Yes, they are.
Take away Dak and they are just.
Look, people say this stuff all the time, and it kind of gets carried. Their defense may legitimately be one of the worst defenses I've ever seen. It is so bad.
And I'm not quite sure how. I mean, there are way too many players, with track records and salaries for that defense to be that bad, right?
You would think.
I know their D-line is, all banged up, and it's, but, geez, it's unbelievable.
You could see, on the sideline last night, just the look of regret on Mike McCarthy's face for taking this job. You could see, what have I done?
Oh,
already, 6 games in, just the regret is there.
And it's Jason Garrett cackles with his one-game winning streak.
Yes.
Giants.
Oh, man, what a dumpster fire the Dallas Cowboys are. World Series starting tonight, Munson. You fired up? You ready to go?
Absolutely. Kershaw on the mound.
Yeah.
Take that with a grain of salt.
He was fine last time.
11-12 record on the line.
What's funny is they showed a stat, basically saying that what's the average that he's out in an inning. And they showed that, I guess, I don't know who's pitching tonight for the Rays, but it said that his is 4.5. 4.5 innings, he's out. Kershaw's 6. I'm like, it probably should be 5.
Yeah, let's bring it down a little bit.
Yeah. I'm telling you, and I tweeted it when he started the last time in that last series against the Braves. And I tweeted way before it happened. I was like, look, Kershaw's looking good right now until the 6th inning happens. Sure enough, 6th inning happens. And you got to take him out. As long as you take Kershaw out, at least in the 5th inning, he's perfect. He's perfect. He's great. But he gets gassed. You got to think he's older. He gets gassed. And then all of a sudden, playoff Kershaw comes. Playoff Kershaw only happens one inning every year. And so avoid that inning this year.
I mean, he's had some games, obviously, he's had some real early meltdowns in some of these bad performances. But, yeah, I like Mookie Betts as a Nashville guy, but kind of do root for a guy like Kershaw just because it's such a thing, But I don't know overall in this series. I guess just root for all of Munson's teams to win championships this year. Is that?
I don't know about all of them. Anyway, I'll probably root for the Dodgers.
Yeah. You got the Mookie Betts factor, right?
Matt Beatty. There's all kinds of local connections.
Oh, why won't you root for all of them?
I don't want to root for Alabama.
Wait, is Matt Beatty your buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then you got to root for them. Yeah.
Wait, why don't you want to root for Alabama, man? Who do they play this week? They don't play anybody. Anybody important?
That's just disrespectful.
Does Alabama have another game that's going to be even remotely interesting this year?
No.
Right?
There's Saturday.
Nothing, right? Yeah, well, that's right. I'm sorry.
I mean, yes. Come on.
Saturday at Neyland.
No matter what happens in that game, it will be interesting, one way or the other.
I like playing in Neyland. It's like Alabama's playground. You get to do all kind of
there
cool
he goes.
Stuff.
When's the last time the Vols beat Alabama there?
2006.
Yeah.
I was there. Stuffing nachos in my face.
Phil
as a 14-year-old. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been
Mike
like,
Shula. Mike Shula versus Phil Fulmer.
I'm pretty sure we're like in like the 5,000 days since the Vols have beaten
Somebody's
Alabama.
Got a counter somewhere. Yeah. There's a Twitter account about it.
I know it's over 5,000 for sure. That there, yeah.
So I'm doing a thing on Vol Twitter this week, but I interviewed most of them last week, and it's like.
You should interview them this week.
Well, yeah. That's
the
thing.
This is a perfect
they were in kind of a bad mood last week because they just, you know, melted down second half of Georgia, but it's like. Man.
Could have been gold this week.
I assumed that this would be the safe week. They'd beat Kentucky, and, you know, then it's Bama week. But, boy, that's not a happy crew. And this quarterback thing, I don't know, we're going to talk about it later in the show. But the way Jeremy Pruitt talked about it yesterday, and I'm not surprised, but, you know, if people thought he was just going to be like, well, thank you, Jarrett. Appreciate your service.
Well,
no.
We're done with Jarrett.
No, he did not do that. Now, he also isn't saying he's starting. So, you know, you may as well take the opportunity when you have a mess like this to let the opponent guess. Not that, like, Nick Saban and company are fretting over which guy's going to be under center Saturday.
Who's going to take the snap, Maurer or Garantano?
We got a totally different defensive game plan if it's Brian Maurer. You know,
I'm pretty sure Nick Saban's, like, on his boat right now, like, not worried about who Tennessee's going to start at quarterback.
Eating those oatmeal pies.
Eating his oatmeal pies, not giving a care in the world about who Jeremy Pruitt's going to start at quarterback. Because, look, but I feel like Alabama's, like, I will say they're vulnerable on defense. So all it's going to take is just like a solid, solid offensive performance from a team to really just compete with Alabama. Here's the problem. But here's the thing, though. You also got to stop Alabama.
Well, yeah, that's not going to happen.
That's the most
difficult
task.
Just going to tell you, Tennessee's not stopping Alabama.
Now, Tennessee, I absolutely think, can line up and run on Alabama. And how many times could you say that?
Not
over,
many.
Over recent years. Not many. They can. They can line up with that offensive line and those backs and run the ball. And I think they will. But, yeah, who's at quarterback? I mean, you have to have balance. You have to have the threat. You have to – and it's – I think it's going to come back around to JG.
Man, I saw Vol Twitter, some people yesterday were counting down the days until Arch Manning ends up in Neyland. I was like, okay, that's what we're doing now, relying on a 15-year-old quarterback.
What
Arch Manning?
Yeah,
baby.
Yeah. What grid's he in? Is
he's
he
like
a sophomore?
Yeah.
Are they going to get him?
I would doubt it. I don't know.
Watch he goes to like Ole Miss.
He probably will.
That's more of the family place than UT is.
Yeah. Well, imagine like Lane Kiffin still being there too, and then you get Arch Manning. Like
that. And that's Cooper's son, right?
That is Cooper.
Cooper's son. Yeah. Arch. Boy. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, hey, look, they got a five-star guy right now. They got a five-star guy right now.
Throw him in there, baby.
You know, I think, yeah, that's the thing. You can't do it this week. You can't. Now, could you do it from Arkansas on? Yes. You could.
We could see it.
This is like the week of who, you know. You got to have.
Who wants to play quarterback this week?
Yeah, exactly. who wants some of this? But, again, I mean, that defense is. They got some guys. I mean, they got some guys who are going to play in the league, but it's not a great defense by any means.
Although they did look much better.
They did.
Against Georgia.
They got it going in the second half.
Bad news yesterday for the Tennessee Titans, and we knew that this might be coming. It made official yesterday. Taylor Lewan announced himself that he had torn his ACL. He will be out for the remainder of the season. Just a really tough blow for a football team where pretty much everything had been going right up until this point in terms of the on-the-field product, 5-0, obviously. Hadn't really had big injuries to deal with other than Adoree Jackson, who hasn't seen action yet. But not good news yesterday for the Titans on Taylor Lewan.
Yeah, terrible news. He broke it himself, and he also put out a video on the Bussin' with the Boys account, sort of thanking the fans. And it was good news in terms of he said there was no torn meniscus, it's just which is big. And he said that it's not the normal bone bruise. A lot of times when people tear their ACL, the swelling is so bad it takes days before they can have the surgery. I would assume that he said he has no swelling, so I would assume that surgery would be like today, tomorrow, yeah. Like real soon. And as the kind of athlete he is and everything, and the way that ACL repairs go these days, I would think that he'd be all good for next year and have three – he's got 3 years left on that five-year, $80 million deal. And he right now is 29 and still a really good player. But it's a killer for certainly – still, it's still never good for a person to get an ACL, obviously, and it's bad for this team. They're going to have to figure some things out. Is it Tyson Brailo? Is it Isaiah Wilson at some point? It's not going to be immediately Isaiah Wilson, but is he a factor at some point? You know, how much help do they have to give to a Tyson Brailo? Whereas in before, they didn't have to give any help to Lawan. I mean, that's why you pay that much to a left tackle. So you can say, you know what? Whoever you have over there.
You lock that
you
guy.
You got him. And we can take another person and do whatever else we want with him. Now you're going to have to. You're going to have to devote more resources to that. But, doesn't kill the Titans, but it's going to be really interesting to see how they adjust to this.
It is, and it's going to be interesting to see, what Arthur Smith does to compensate for that in terms of, do you send Adam Humphries over there to chip a little bit more often than they would otherwise? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, especially this week against Pittsburgh with that pass rush and everything they've got flying at you. They're going to target some Brailo. I mean, that's going to be the game plan defensively for the Steelers, is to exploit that weakness. We saw J.J. Watt do it pretty much immediately when some Brailo came in the game after Lawan went down. Interesting matchup this week for the Titans to try to figure out how to overcome that without Lawan.
Yeah, it's probably get the ball out fast is one of the plans. But you got to run the ball, too. The Steelers have been really good against the run, but – you know, I think that's one thing I've noticed with some Brailo. And, I mean, it's a few plays here and there. It doesn't mean it's like every single play, but he looks like a pretty good run blocker. He's had some really nice blocks in the running game. They obviously felt good enough to still go with that Wildcat, to win the game Sunday. Now, Vrabel did say yesterday they were going on fourth. So it was a two-down play, which makes sense because, to me, it's like, man, if you call that play, that's your third and five play. And then you could kick a field goal. That's whew. So they were going to go either way. But some Brailo, he was in there. They got it done up front. So I think you got to run that ball to slow down that pass rush Sunday.
Now, I believe Vrabel when he says that. But isn't it always easier, after the fact that that you scored, to be like, yeah, of course we were going on fourth down?
Yes, except a couple of things. One, he answered so quickly. And, it was just like, I think it was PK who asked him. I think it was like a quick yep. And it does make sense. It really does. It makes sense for that call to be part. It makes sense to go. I mean, first of all, your field goal, I know you're right up at the goal line, but your field goal situation's been a problem that day. And it's the same sort of thing with the Texans going for two.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd rather let my offense have one play to win it than trust my defense for a second in this game. So I believe him. I don't believe him. He sure as heck wasn't being honest about the penalty. We can talk about that next segment, but I believe him on the go for on fourth down.
Good setup there, Joe.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about bit next segment. Some takeaways from Mike Vrabel's press conference yesterday, including being a little bit cheeky about some stuff. We'll do that on the other side. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, Mike, question for you on that late 12 men on the field penalty against you guys. I guess first question, was that, intentionally done to stop the clock?
We have to do a better job with penalties. We had seven of them, I think, pretty uncharacteristic. We had a few on offense. So, we have to be better in all areas. And I think penalties are one thing that we focus on, communicating, trying to give ourselves the best chance to win a football game.
Right. But the 12 men on the field one in particular, were you trying to save some clock time by getting that call?
The second and one, just trying to get them to try to make a stop there and substitute it in, an extra DB, but we ultimately got to do a better job on first down in 4 minute defense and not give up 9 yards.
That's the dancing right there by Mike Vrabel, and once again some fantastic producer work from Marquise Munson.
Fleetwood Mac, baby. Well done. That was the watching him dance around that question.
I like Glennon's, but right.
But yeah, but
he starts laughing.
What about his long right, like right. But what about that question I asked you, like about the 12 men on the field?
The next question is, Mike, what is the defense where Josh Kalu goes in a key moment late in the game? What? We have not seen Josh Kalu used in that way.
How much improvement have you seen from Josh Kalu defensively over the course of the past week?
I understand they had some secondary struggles in this game, but you know, that's an interesting move. Let's try Kalu out here in this situation.
I told you yesterday he wasn't going to say anything about it.
Yeah.
He just wasn't going to do it.
I mean, it is awesome watching it, for anyone out there who hasn't watched it. So it's Warren Sharp. I retweeted yesterday. You can find
at Joe Rexroad on Twitter.
There you go. So it's Warren Sharp, and I don't remember the account. I'll find it. But he tweeted out not only, like, video of the whole thing, but he, like, stopped it and circled things with the little arrows. So, first of all, like, hilarious is when he sends out Josh Kalu, Jonathan Joseph has this look of, like, what? What are you doing? And Vrabel just so like, yeah, just leave. And it's very much like the Jets game 2 years ago when he basically did the same thing, you know? But the hilarious is the Vrabel acting angry. That's just, I mean, he does the whole thing like, oh.
He throws his head down. How could you have too many men on the field in this situation?
And he can be cackling because he has his mask on. I mean, he could have been just the biggest smile in the world laughing because he has mask on and still throwing his arms up like he was outraged. Pretty funny, man. You were right. I thought maybe – I mean, it's one of those things like, look, what is wrong with doing this?
I mean, nothing, but he's going to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea is –
he doesn't want the NFL to, like, change the rule.
Yeah.
He's trying to deflect as much as possible.
Like, they're not going to change the rule in the middle of the year, and if they change the rule, the rules change for everybody. I mean, you take a penalty and they stop the clock.
I know, but he's like the only one doing this. It's a competitive advantage.
Is that
true? Gone.
Is he
–
I have
never seen anybody else do that.
Yeah. I mean, Belichick did the same thing he did last year in the playoff game earlier in the year.
The punt.
Yes. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I'll take your word for it. I mean, I haven't heard of it. So, but it's kind of a – I mean, it makes sense. Hey.
Saved him 40 seconds.
Right. And, you know, then the Texans on the next play actually threw an incompletion, stopped the clock again, give him a free stoppage. Now, they still – then got another first down on that defense, and but that you think about that time, if Tannehill had 106 seconds, you know, you give him 26 seconds, is he coming down the field? Probably not.
Be a long way to go.
Wait a minute, did I say 106?
You did.
Right. So
that'd be
so. 66. I'm sorry, 66. My gosh.
Michigan State math.
Yeah, exactly. I do have a calculator. So a minute six, maybe a minute six he gets it done. But, boy, it's a lot better to have a minute 46. And they had 4 seconds left. You're going to have to take some – he was able to go pretty much safe dinking down the field. If you have that much time, you're going to have to take a couple chances, and who knows how that goes.
Just throw the ball to Anthony Firkser and get out of his way, baby.
That's right. You know, they put out a graphic with Tannehill, Henry. We said yesterday, you know, Tannehill, Henry, first time the NFL's ever had a 350-yard passer, 200-yard rusher in the same game. It's also the first time in Titans history a 300, 200, 100. And the 100,
Anthony Firkser.
Mr. Firkser, Mr. Harvard. So,
you know, one thing we did not get to on the show yesterday, they had their best rushing day of the season without their best receiving blocker. Corey Davis not in the game. Just imagine how well they would have run the ball had Corey Davis been in there and blocking down the field.
That's a great point. You know, 94-yard touchdown. I mean, what, he have an 18 and a 34? Those are both probably
touchdowns.
Derrick Henry probably has 400 yards if Corey Davis is on the field. So he's back this week.
Great segue there again. Two segues in a row by Rex Road in back-to-back segments.
I'm on a segue hot streak.
Corey Davis taken off the COVID-19 reserve list yesterday, would think to be available against Pittsburgh on Sunday, and now having A.J. Brown, Adam Humphries, Corey Davis back in, and presumably all healthy at the same time for the first time this season. Interesting to see, even with Lawan out now, and that changes the offense, how does the offense look with all three of those guys completely healthy at the same time?
Yeah, and Michael Pruitt is the last guy. Michael Pruitt is a an important part of the run game for sure. He is the last guy still on the list. I mean, if things go as they've been going, I think there's a pretty good chance that they could have him back this week too. Jonnu Smith was hurt. I didn't look too serious, so I would think he'd be back. So the offense, you know, the offense basically as whole as it's been possibly, other than, you know, possibly the third best player on the team. Or as Stillman says, possibly the best player on the team, which I took.
At Lawan, number one.
Yes, which I took issue with yesterday in a text flurry towards Stillman.
How many text battles do y'all have?
Well, it's just like if I'm listening to that show and he says something ridiculous, I usually text him. And then he usually says it on the show. So, and then we go back and forth. And then during the break, he'll really go at it and then he'll go back and talk more. But, I mean, look, I mean, Taylor Lewan is a huge loss. And I think you can make the case Taylor Lewan is the third best player on the team. And you could argue that at his position, like you could argue, this is his argument, is like at his position, he's higher than like Tannehill is at quarterback in the NFL. Although I think that that's not, at this point, I'm not even 100% sure of that. But like I told him, okay, well, Bo Brinkley may also be like a higher ranked long snapper in the NFL than Tannehill. But who are you picking to lose? Who are you picking right now?
No offense,
you have Derrick Henry. Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm just talking about Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, Taylor Lewan. You have to pick one of them to be out. I mean, you're not going to pick either of the other two. I mean, it's you take either of those other two guys out of the lineup and you completely change the complexion of the season. That's not necessarily the case with Lewan, although it's still a huge loss. And we'll see week after week how Sombrello does or how Isaiah Wilson, whatever it is. It's going to affect them a lot. But you take either of those guys out and what is this team?
Yeah, that's a great question. Other than Vrabel pleading the fifth yesterday on the Zoom call about the penalty and the too many men on the field, what stood out to you about his Zoom call yesterday?
So much.
Did it? It seems like it.
Well, he was
like,
asked,
what do you say at this point? You're 5-0.
Right. Yeah, he's, you know, he was asked about Dory Jackson. So, well, he had said some interesting stuff about Isaiah Wilson. I will say this. Twice he said that Isaiah Wilson's response has been really good, and he talked about him being in shape right now. So Vrabel's very, very careful about any sort of expectations or really even talking about players, but he did make sure to say that. You know, here and there, if a player does something really good, Vrabel will he'll allow a little bit of comment on that player. It's rare. And like, you know, Vaccaro last year in the playoffs, I was like, what's he? He's actually talking about a guy's individual performance. Holy cow.
It's gotten into him.
Yeah, but he said that twice, and that is encouraging. If Isaiah Wilson has taken the last few weeks to be, you know, serious and try to get himself ready, I mean, it's coming fast. It's not coming as fast as this week, I wouldn't think, but it could be coming quickly for him. And that changes also. The trading deadline's coming up. The Titans' next tackle is Brandon Kemp, practice squad undrafted rookie.
Yep.
After those three guys. So you got Kelly, Sombrello, you got Isaiah Wilson, then you got a practice squad guy. And there's no one really on the roster that can pop out there, as far as I know. They're interior linemen. So the idea that John Robinson might be looking around for another tackle certainly is there. But Isaiah Wilson could change that if he really is ready. That did stand out. And also, Vrabel talked about Adoree Jackson. You know, they're going to look at him this week. Like I told you guys, I mean, I don't think it's far from him and for him. And obviously, that would be timely this week to get him back.
When we come back, what sort of effect will not having Taylor Lewan have on this offense tangibly starting on Sunday? Our good friend Floyd Reese, former Titans GM and co-host of Jared and the GM, will join us. We'll talk about that coming up next. But first, hope, health, and connection. During these unsteady times, it's never been more important for all of us to have these in our lives, but it's even more important for our children and teens. So please join STARS for an important virtual campaign. Cherish the hope, health, and connection of our young people. This 6-week campaign will launch on Monday, October 19th, and run until Tuesday, December 1st, which is Giving Tuesday. Please follow the campaign and celebrate all the incredible ways STARS provides hope, health, and connection within our community. All proceeds raised will go directly to their school-based prevention and mental health counseling services, as well as their intensive outpatient adolescent treatment program. To learn more, please go to starsnashville.org. That's starsnashville.org. RobbieandRexroad.org. We'll be right back on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, talking some Titans 5-0 on the season after a big win against the Houston Texans on Sunday. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Floyd Reese, former Titans GM and co-host of Jared and the GM, sponsored by Sealmaster, keeping your parking lots looking brand new. Floyd, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Gentlemen, how are you?
We are doing very well. And Floyd, obviously the big news of the day yesterday, Taylor Lewan, torn ACL, out for the remainder of the season. Obviously, that's very bad for the Titans. How bad do you think it is from an offensive standpoint in terms of what they've been able to do and how that affects them moving forward?
Yeah, you know, you can't lose an all-pro, you know, all-star caliber left tackle and not have it affect you. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't compensate for it, which they will have to do. But still, you just can't. You know, this team, we don't have enough stars to be losing a star. and so it creates a problem. I think if you look at the tackle position, you compare it to a year ago. You know, we're down to the third and fourth left or tackle and maybe looking at a fifth. You know, so it's hard to compete in the NFL when you're playing backup tackles.
So, Floyd, as you look at this situation, obviously, a lot of this is going to depend on Isaiah Wilson at least getting ready so they can feel like they have a third tackle if needed. And if not, you know, at some point really push into play. But really, after that, you know, they have one practice squad player at tackle. It doesn't look like any of the interior linemen would pop outside, at least based on their histories. So would you be looking seriously right now at other teams to try to get another tackle before the trading deadline?
Well, I mean, you might, but the problem is, regardless of what you do, there's not a tackle out there available that you're going to bring in that could, you know, fill Taylor's shoes, let's face it. And so whatever you bring in, short of some just mystery player popping out, is probably a little bit more of the same, you know, a little bit more of what you have. And so, you know, right now, I mean, we have to, the young guy has got to come along. I mean, there's more pressure on him now than ever, and how he responds to that and how he responds to the coaching and whatnot will be critical and really, really important. But other than that, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, you're going to find a tackle out there that is better than even your rookie first-round draft choice. You know, they're just probably not available, not out there.
Former Titans general manager and co-host of Jared and the GM, Floyd Reese, on the line with us, sponsored by Sealmaster. Floyd, you know, Ryan Tannehill obviously off to a great start to the season for the Titans. Do you think he belongs in the NFL MVP conversation? I know it's early. I know we're only five games in. But if you were handing out awards right now, like, where does Ryan Tannehill fit in that mix, in your opinion?
Oh, he's playing great. I mean, he really is. He's playing really, really well. And you can look at games where maybe he's not quite up to standards. But, I mean, let's face it, he's going into a lot of these games and throwing for, you know, three or four touchdown passes, maybe even running for another. I mean, he's lighting up the scoreboard, which is really, really big. I mean, us on offense, we've really been playing pretty well. You look at the, you know, we've had 2 weeks in a row where we scored 42 points. When's the last time that's happened? So they're on fire and they're playing well. And Derrick Henry is, as we know, Derrick Henry. And so right now they're in pretty good shape. And that's why, you know, you kind of, you know, you're really hitting stride. You're really hitting, you know, maybe as good as you can play. And then you lose somebody like Taylor. And how much does that affect your efficiency? And, you know, that's going to be a giant question, especially this week. You know, when you're playing Pittsburgh and the pass rushers they have, I mean, you better buckle it up.
Right. I mean, obviously, you're probably going to have to give Sombrilo, and we assume it's just going to be Sombrilo right now with Kelly staying where he's been, and we'll see on Wilson, you know, how fast he can come along, but probably have to give him more help. So how much does that, you know, hurt things? I guess basically you're at least probably chipping him, you know, maybe somebody is staying in that would have gone out, things like that. I mean, how much do you think this might even affect Tannehill? I think one of the things I've been so impressed with Floyd is how he stands in. And even if the protection breaks down, which usually hasn't happened until a few seconds, he stands in, he'll take a hit and still deliver the ball. But do you think this even affects his mindset a little bit, just knowing he doesn't have that guy protecting his blind side now?
You know, I would imagine it would have to. And that being said, I agree with you. I mean, Ryan has been a consummate professional with his ability to stand in there, even in the face of getting smacked. You know, the hard thing going into a week like this is, you know, you're kind of, do you want to drown in the Atlantic or drown in the Pacific? You say, okay, I need to give Kelly help on what? And then you go, well, no, maybe I need to give, you know, Sombrero help on Truitt. And you go, well, maybe I need to. And so, you know, if you end up doubling or chipping both sides, then you've got just a couple of guys out in the pattern, which helps their coverage. And so, you know, you're saying to yourself, okay, which way are we going this time? And I guess you probably try to change it up enough that you have them guessing. But the truth is, you know, you're probably not going to guess right every time. And Pittsburgh, at least in the first five games, they've shown the tendency to pretty much get theirs. You know, I think they're leading the league with, like, you know, 24, 25, 26 sacks or whatever it is. And so they're off the charts with putting pressure on the quarterback.
Floyd, what are you seeing right now defensively from the Titans? Obviously, the numbers are not good. Is there a fix in your mind when you watch this group right now defensively?
I'm not sure. Until we can get, you know, some speed back at the corner position, I'm not sure there is. And I think we've seen at least twice in the last three games where, you know, as a defensive guy, when you're calling signals, it gets really frustrating. You know, you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to bring a fifth guy. I'm going to put us in a man for man with a free safety kind of coverage. Well, then you can't cover the guys outside and they get a completion. You say, "Oh, okay, I can't do that. Let's go ahead and sit back and let the rush get there at some point in time," and then the rush doesn't get there and, you know, they run around or they complete another one, and so you're kind of going back and forth and back and forth. And I'm not sure there's an answer to it other than just being patient, because we've seen, like I said, a couple of times in the last couple of games where you get impatient and you say, well, I'm going to blitz. You know, I'm just going for it. And it's cost us touchdowns, you know, in at least a couple of the last two games. I mean, we saw the one coverage this week with Butler when he got beat, and I don't know what the heck that coverage was. You know, I've never seen anything like that. So, you know, you're either making a mistake or you're putting people in a position where they just don't have a great chance to be successful, and you're kind of praying another part of the defense is going to bail you out. And to date, we just haven't seen a lot of that. If we go into a game on defense and are unable to get some kind of turnovers, I mean, I think it's going to be a struggle.
Yeah, that TD, yeah, looked like some kind of miscommunication, I would assume there, but
yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was so wide open, and Butler, you know, it looked like he was looking for a free safety, and there was no free safety, and he was way, way, way inside, and there wasn't even a free safety in the picture. You know, so you're saying to yourself, okay, there's something not right about that. I'm not sure what it is.
So $25 million basically invested in Jadeveon Clowney and Vic Beasley. So far, you know, no payoff in terms of actually getting home to the quarterback. From what you've seen of those guys, and I know, you know, Beasley didn't play much at all in this last game, but from what you've seen from those guys, is there, you know, is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I don't, you know, I mean, from the beginning, I'm not sure that we could have looked at Clowney in his history and said, okay, this guy's going to come in and get 12 sacks. You know, he's just not been that. So I'm not sure we weren't looking through some kind of a veil when we were looking at him and expecting, you know, tremendous pressure on the quarterback, because he's just never been able to do it. The other kid, Beasley, has for a year been able to do that. Now, we haven't seen it, but like you said, I mean, I can't remember, but I want to say he played maybe 12, 16 snaps. You know, that's just not very much play time for a pass rush guy. And so I don't know, you know, if they need to put together, you know, some kind of a group that is just strictly a speed group. I mean, the truth is we're just not showing that consistent outside pressure to compensate or to add to maybe what we're getting from Simmons. And Simmons is really doing a pretty decent job considering he's really the only kind of legitimate pass rush we're seeing right now. But with him rushing that well inside, we should be getting something from the outside guys. And I don't know if you have to start looking at an Evans and moving him in there. I'm not sure if you don't go, you know, if your four-man rush doesn't all of a sudden end up being, you know, Beasley and Evans and Simmons and Clowney or a DB like we used to bring with Logan Ryan doing some things like that. But we're going to have to mix and match here until we find something that we can at least get some consistent pressure on a quarterback with.
Floyd Reese, former Titans GM and co-host of Jared and the GM here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, has been our guest, sponsored by Sealmaster. Floyd, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate
it. Have a great day, guys.
You too, Floyd.
You as well.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, this defense right now, you look at what's going on out there, you're not generating a ton of pass rush, especially when you're rushing just, you know, Clowney and Beasley. And Simmons got there a few times the other day. I thought Harold Landry had a nice game. But it's not happening consistently enough. And when you couple that with what Floyd was talking about, some mistakes in the secondary, it's just been not a very good recipe for that Titans defense so far. And yet, in spite of that, here they are, 5-0.
Right. I mean, that's the good thing is I think certainly there are some guys out there with track records that tell you that they can do more and they should do more. I actually think Clowney has at least – he's – had some moments where you've noticed him. Beasley, you know, Correa's gone now, you know, and now you would think that Beasley would be in line for more work. You know, maybe that'll happen this week, but it was surprising how little he played last week.
When we come back, the NFL has wrapped up their investigation with the Tennessee Titans. We'll discuss what they found on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
League or speculating that maybe the Titans concealed information from the Vikings and or the league office before going up to Minnesota for the game. And fortunately, there wasn't a jump of the virus from the Titans to the Vikings in that game. And then there are the workouts from last week. Regardless of whether or not the league has any jurisdiction over the players who did something that they weren't supposed to do, the league definitely has jurisdiction over the Titans. And you roll all those things together, and that's why the other teams that are watching this very carefully, not because they've got any type of morbid curiosity to see how bad the Titans get hit. They want to know what the or else is when something like this happens. And I think that's why there's this belief that the Titans are going to get it in a way no one's ever been punished.
That was Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk a couple of weeks ago on with Jared and the GM. And Joe, we've been obviously been very closely monitoring this story with the Titans and the NFL and the investigation ongoing with COVID-19 and maybe some protocols that the Titans broke. And there was a sense about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that the NFL was just going to hammer the Titans. You heard Florio in that interview talk about maybe some draft picks being lost, maybe some suspensions even being tossed out there for Mike Vrabel and John Robinson. About a week ago, there was an about face on that, and those pretty much went out the door. And finally, some news yesterday from Adam Schefter. Quote, the NFL informed the Titans that their review now has concluded. Team was fully cooperative, inspected facility, and found it to be in compliance. There were incidents of people not wearing masks. There was insufficient communication regarding player workouts outside of the facility. Individuals will not be disciplined. There is no discussion of forfeiture of draft picks. Titans organization will face a potential fine.
Yeah, so first of all, I think that's the right decision. And yes, if this leaks, basically it was Pelissero and Schefter. They've sort of been the leakers of official NFL people who don't want to say things officially.
Yes.
You know, that's the right decision. If there's a fine, you know, that makes sense. I mean, some sort of deterrent, some sort of message to the league, you know, like you got to be better than this. Again, we still don't really know, and I don't think we'll ever know exactly the whole blow-by-blow of the communication. I think it becomes less important, frankly, if it's just a fine. I mean, I think if they got hit really hard, then it's like, okay, so what exactly? Who said what? You know, was it an email? Was it, you know, it's more like now if it's just a fine, it's like move on. Let's try to just be better and hope we get through the season. That's what makes sense. It makes sense to for the whole league to work together. The NFL does not want to admit that its protocols were faulty, but they've changed a bunch of stuff, which admits that they were.
Yes.
And this all makes sense. As far as, and so then the immediate reaction, I mean, even a week ago, and we're going to have Charles Robinson on later, a week ago, he still was, you know, said, you know, it's still possible that they get hit here. So there's an immediate reaction to go back to like the Florios and, you know, screaming and like, listen, it was clear that some of these voices were just other GMs. We said that all along. It's obvious that some of these GMs want them to get hit.
And right? Maybe some rival GMs.
Yeah, right.
We don't know.
Yeah, sure. You know, someone who already, you know, doesn't like the Titans or doesn't like John Robinson. Maybe they're back in the day when they were scouts, you know.
That John Robinson.
Yeah, you know, they got in a fight at a pro day. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, it could be a rival team that's like, oh, they should suspend those guys for the year. I mean, some of that stuff was so overboard. Again, the I'm now losing his name, but the USA Today editor who wrote, you know, this like this is the greatest crime
in
ever
in NFL
like,
history.
You know,
yeah,
end their season. You know, it was like, come on, people. But also remember this, like Mike Florio, even on Jerry the GM, he qualified everything like, and he even said like, I'm not writing all this stuff. I don't want the wrong thing out there. He, you know, he didn't say like, I'm getting from the NFL that this is going to happen.
Right.
He's basically was quoting other people around the league. We had our guy, Mike Sando, quoted some GMs saying what they basically would like to see. So there's a little, you know, the killing of messengers gets, you know, it happens a lot and it's fine. It goes with the territory. But right now, if you looked at it correctly the whole time, then there's no real reason for outrage on that stuff now. I mean, it was just that these GMs, I think some of them really wanted this to be a huge hit. And I think it never made sense to do that because you're trying together collectively to get through this. And if you absolutely obliterate someone, you know, if they did something wrong or they weren't good enough, they weren't following everything correctly, even with the workouts, I don't think that fosters a cooperative atmosphere.
And to that point, I think a lot of people were thinking, okay, if the NFL comes out and they just hammer the Titans here and the punishments are bad, there's suspensions, there's draft picks, all these different things, why would that encourage another NFL team, if they do have problems, to be transparent or cooperative with the NFL at all at that point? Because they're going to be just terrified of getting the same punishments handed out their way. So the more and more you think about it, the more I think this type of decision by the NFL makes sense.
Yeah, now look, you do have the – someone brought this up, and honestly, I don't remember if it was a named or unnamed person. You know, there's so much has been written about this. Someone brought up the idea of, you know, the 3-9 team in November or whatever, yeah, that like is just playing out the string anyway, and – like, whatever. You know, like, there's a general, you lose a lot of intensity and focus on a lot of things, right, when you get to that point in the season. Yeah. Although it's still individuals still playing for their jobs and there's still professional pride. But still, that's the type of team where it's like, you get, like, if that team messes up, it can affect everyone. That's the whole thing here is, you know, everyone can be affected when one team has a problem. So I understand the idea of like, this has got to be better everywhere. There's got to be a little bit of a deterrent to being sloppy. But yeah, ultimately, if you balance everything, this makes more sense.
So now if you're the Titans, the question is, how diligent are you about continuing to make sure that you've learned from this? Because some people around the league, right or wrong, are going to look at this like the Titans got off the hook, and that's fine. They can look at that whatever way they want to. if I'm the Titans, what I'm interested in is, okay, from wearing the masks in the building to, you know, communicating things better with your players, have you learned from this? Is this something that you can prevent from happening again to the best of your ability for the remainder of this season? I was watching the sideline and Vrabel pretty closely on Sunday just from curiosity to see, you know, how good they were about keeping the mask on. And by and large, I mean, it was on the whole time with Vrabel. I think he took it down like a few times to yell into his microphone about something. But other than that, I mean, it was pretty much on. I'm interested to see if they can continue to learn from this. I think they will, but, you know, human nature. The more time that passes by, maybe the more lax you get. I hope that doesn't happen with the Titans.
I think Vrabel may have taken it down to help fake outrage and the 12-man.
He may penalty. Have, yes.
I know, but he actually did take it down for a minute to yell into it. But the Titans are the health code violating restaurant. And I swear to you that I do this every time. This has happened multiple times where a restaurant will have a health code violation. And my wife and we're like, we're going to go eat there right now. For one thing, they usually have deals to get people to come in. And I guarantee you that's the cleanest place in town.
Yeah, they're never cleaner than they are after that.
You cannot, because a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, I would never go there. I'm like, no, if they just got hit and it's public, go there. They are the cleanest restaurant in town. And it's the same thing with the Titans. I would be willing to bet they are going to be as compliant and locked down on the protocols as any team in the league the rest of the way. I bet you they will be.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. Now, if you're the NFL, you're looking around right now, and there were some, I guess, hairy situations last week. At one point, it was reported the Colts facility was closing down. They had four tests. That ended up not being true. They had false positives.
Yep.
Atlanta as well had a situation. But over the weekend, so far, hasn't been anything. So what you can't do right now if your team's around the NFL is do what I think a lot of us did the first 2-3 weeks of this season and get lulled into a false sense of security that everything's going to be okay and everything's going to go the right way, because we saw what happened when people adopt that mindset.
Right. I mean, this should end up being a good development in terms of everyone understanding that. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, we're used to every morning refreshing Tom Pelissero's Twitter account. Yeah. I don't know what to do with myself anymore at 7 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's getting some sleep now. You think?
Maybe. I don't know. Check it out. I'll go look right now. Maybe he's just tweeting about regular, boring football stuff.
It is nice to be able to talk about regular football stuff. So that seems like the Titans have escaped severe punishment from the NFL. Still some potential fines on the table. We'll see what ends up coming from that as the NFL information continues to come out here. When we come back, we're going to get into the Vols. Jeremy Pruitt spoke yesterday via Zoom and had some interesting comments about the quarterback position. We'll react to that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.